Hello, I'm Lori Watanabe, the editor of Mobility Management Magazine. Welcome to our Mobility Management Podcast, and welcome back today to Josh Anderson, Jim Black, and Sarah Leonard from Sunrise Medical and RGK. They're here to talk about not just RGK's made-to-measure strategy, but truly how and why the best fit ultra-lightweight chair provides the best performance for the wheelchair rider. Josh Anderson is VP of Business Development for Sunrise Medical North America. He began his career in 1993 working for a CRT provider in Miami. In 1998, Josh helped create the first Spinergy wheels for wheelchairs and started its wheelchair division. In 2004, Josh joined TiLite, where he was responsible for the launch and marketing of its manual portfolio. Josh has presented extensively at seating and mobility conferences on topics such as wheelchair skills training and manual wheelchair prescription for independent propulsion. A wheelchair rider himself, Josh has served as president of the board of directors for Users First, and he's now leading the introduction of ultra-lightweight, made-to-measure RGK wheelchairs in North America. Jim Black is Director of Strategic Accounts and Business Sales for RGK North America. He has more than 30 years of experience in complex rehab technology sales, product management, and marketing, with a focus on made-to-measure manual mobility. Jim is a three-time Paralympian and therefore understands very well the benefits of a made-to-measure product. Jim's resume includes being the Director of Business Development and Sales for New Motion and being Permobil's Manual Product and Marketing Director. Jim now manages RGK sales in North America and is involved in the strategic and tactical development of product programs. And Sarah Leonard, PT, DPT, ATP, works for Sunrise Medical US as a clinical educator in the Northeast region. As a physical therapist, Sarah has specialized in neuro rehab and spinal cord injury, and as an ATP, she's worked for a national CRT provider. Additionally, Sarah serves as the assistant coach for the United States Wheelchair Rugby Association Low Point team, is head coach of the Shepherd Smash, and has been an active participant in adaptive sports and recreation throughout her career. And our podcast today is sponsored by RGK. RGK believes in challenging the conventional, breaking down barriers, and empowering people. As RGK says, good is not good enough. If we can build a better product for customers, we have an obligation to do so, and we are relentlessly pursuing that goal. From using state-of-the-art materials to precision measurements to the millimeter, to a better way to order using design templates and the RGK Genius program, RGK is revamping the way made-to-measure is done and is powering your wheelchair rider's ambitions. Josh, Jim, and Sarah, it's great to have you back on the podcast.
Thanks for having us back, Lori.
This is the second RGK podcast with Josh, Jim, and Sarah. If you missed the first episode, you can listen to it by clicking on the link in this podcast description, and that link will take you right to the first episode. The focus for that first episode was the made-to-measure process of custom-building ultralight wheelchairs and why it's so important for wheelchairs to fit as best they can. For this episode, we're going to be focusing on rolling dynamics and propulsion efficiency and how both are greatly impacted by the fit of a chair. So this time, I'm going to start with Sarah first. Sarah, you're a clinician, and you've seen, obviously, many, many wheelchair riders in many, many different ultralight wheelchairs. Have you had riders come into clinic with mistaken ideas about how propulsion efficiency is attained? And by that, I mean, for example, do you have riders who come into clinic and just say, I want the lightest weight chair you have, Sarah, or I want a titanium chair, Sarah, because they think overall weight or materials are really what determines a chair's propulsion efficiency and overall success?
You know, Lori, I think there are a lot of misconceptions out there. You know, all too often riders get focused on the titanium versus aluminum argument. You're right. They're very focused on weight. You know, if they're coming back for a new chair, they've rightfully identified something's not right and the chair can perform better. But when you look at the configuration, there's so many things that can be done to optimize the system before we even have the weight conversation. You know, that's a secondary component for me. What we need to talk more about is the weight distribution within the system, you know, how that impacts propulsion efficiency, how we can reduce rolling resistance. I think that's intimidating to both clinicians and riders alike, simply because these concepts aren't always well understood. And to gain understanding comes with trial and error. So there's a lot riding on getting these things correct and simply making the chair lighter without looking at things like weight distribution, wheelbase, rolling resistance is a disservice to the rider, who is at high risk for overuse injury over time. So for me, looking at propulsion efficiency is huge. It's just about how we do that and how we have those conversations to educate the rider and even clinicians on these concepts.
Yeah, we've had lots of conversations, and it's refreshing just hearing you as a clinician really talking about, the things that you're talking about. Weight is extremely important. However, there's a lot of misinformation out there, as you stated, a lot of regurgitation of the message that was created a long time ago, a lot of skewed stuff about weight. Weight isn't always just the frame or just the material. Understanding configuration is the vital key and how it relates to the rider's health and wellness, which is extremely important. And I think that's what we should be talking about, the health and wellness of the riders. Josh and I have been doing this over 30 years now. It's amazing how old we are now, Josh. But all the mistakes, the numerous mistakes that I made because of a lot of the information that I was given and the limitations that us as manufacturers have when it comes to configurations and custom configuration versus made to measure. We talked about that last time, but, adding a caster here, most of the weight comes from the components we put on there. We all know that. And taking off weight is extremely important. Understanding, the wheelbase, understanding occupied frame length. For example, that common sense physics side of it, in the early 90s, I remember being with such a short wheelbase and flipping, over the handlebars type of effect or just not being able to roll. And we were teaching people to have the shortest wheelbase as possible. But now it's all about proportion and really reducing rolling resistance. And that's controlling the frame, the front wheels and the rear wheels. Rolling resistance and those forces really do a lot of damage to our shoulders. And back in the 90s, it was common to have 4 and 5 inches of seat slope from front seat height to rear seat height. And the forces that we put on the shoulders and the forces we put on the joints with that startup and the health of those users, I made a lot of those mistakes. And we used to set everybody like that. Everybody's different. We need to configure a chair proportionally to that body. And we have great formulas to help you do that. That's what Josh and I know, because we have a lot of conversations, really want to go. And that's a direction we want to go, is really to help clinicians and prescribers understand how to configure a chair proportionally to the body. That was kind of in a nutshell from that side.
I think that's spot on, Jim. I also think that just the way we look at, how we measure effectiveness in a wheelchair is skewed a little bit. I love Apple. And I have the Apple Watch, and you can measure how many times you push per day. That's only half of the equation. I want to push less and go further, right? That's really what I want to do, is I want to be as efficient as possible. Laura, you talked about just repetitive, or I think Sarah may have talked about repetitive use injuries. And OSHA defines anything that's high risk as a repetitive movement of 900 times plus in a single day. And the average wheelchair rider propels or pushes his chair on average 2,600 to 3,500 times per day. So they're well beyond what is at high risk. And being able to actually maximize that efficiency, like Jim talked about, fitting the chair proportionally to the rider is so important. Yeah, I want to get exercise just like everybody else. But, what I look at is, how far did I go with those 3,500 pushes in a day? And so even the way we measure things, and Gene Minkle talks about this a lot, the argument whether it's better to preserve to conserve or use it or lose it kind of thing. So I think it's really important for us as a manufacturer and as riders ourselves to look at how can we make the chair as efficient as possible.
And I think that's important to point out, because I know made to measure is what we talked about last time, and being able to get to the quarter inch with RGK's measurement process and taking more measurements as well. And I didn't want that to come across as sort of a marketing campaign or a marketing bullet point. There's a real reason that those measurements can lead to better outcomes. So it's not just taking the measurements just to brag that you take more measurements, or saying, well, we can get down to the quarter inch, we're much more precise. That is not just a marketing bullet point. It's actually a means to an end, right? By taking more measurements, by taking them more precisely, you can actually build a chair that fits someone better. And hopefully with all that information, can translate that into a design for that particular person that is going to lead to better propulsion efficiency. And that's a nice transition, I think, for especially for Josh and Jim, both of you longtime wheelchair riders, and not to touch on a sore spot, but both of you aging with a disability as well, aging in your wheelchairs. So I wanted to know if you could give us some specific examples, especially if you compare what your activities are now today versus what they were 20 years ago, when maybe your body recovered a lot faster because you were younger. What specific examples can you give about your day and your activities, maybe transferring and the like, where your chair's efficiency and fit are vital to being able to do these activities, all the activities you want to do in a day?
Jim, do you want to take that
sure,
one?
I'll go first. And that's a great, great question, because I think about it all the time. And I think about some of those configurations and what we do. And as I age, being afraid of getting hurt is on my mind all the time. Every ache and pain I have. So it is harder. It's harder using wheel locks now for everything when I transfer. And there was a time where it didn't matter, you know, you can use the motion of that, you know, chair. Life has changed. But then really looking back on configuration, it's so important to create, and sorry, I'm going back to this, but Sarah had said it earlier, wheelbase is critical for today for people to transfer. When I can control your wheelbase, which is that weight distribution between the front and the rear wheels, when you can control that for the body or the weights in it or their center of gravity or your center of mass or where that is, you create more efficiencies for transfers, for spending more time in the front of your chair, for not front loading the casters, to reducing the rolling resistance of chairs. And as I age, you know, my shoulders, I'm very conscious of what I'm doing. I'm even at this point, I went back to my doctor and he prescribed some new long leg braces for me so I can stand more, which has really extremely helped me in my efficiencies for transferring, for doing things, and just my balanced bladder program. It's just night and day from where it was. But the ironic thing is, and sorry, I'm going to go on my platform here. The ironic thing is that my insurance company paid over $20,000, $24,000 to be exact, for some long leg braces that I use less than 1% of the day. It's more of a therapy thing for me, where my chair, you know, insurance companies won't even pay $2,500. I know we're not going down that track, but it's appalling to me that our industry is doing this. That's why we need more research. We need better research. And that's why I feel made to measure is just extremely important. But again, it's important for my health and wellness. So if I can reduce rolling resistance, I can maintain pushing for longer distances. I can go to my daughter's soccer game. She's a soccer player on a very high-end team. You know, sometimes I roll over five or six fields at a tournament. And if I don't create front stability in my chair or create that flotation by increasing my wheelbase in the front, it's impossible to get through there. I shouldn't say impossible, but the damage that we do are having people push us through there and our front casters dig in and having to be in a wheelie all the time. You shouldn't have to be in a wheelie. And that's all about configuration, weight distribution. You know, when I was younger, I could push across those fields with my younger daughters. But now with my youngest daughter pushing across four fields, I'm out of breath. I can barely do it. But if it wasn't for understanding weight distribution and what I'm doing in my chair today, I would have a hard time. I would definitely have to be in power, or which is not a bad thing. Some of us should be in power. You know, I'm not saying a manual chair is for everybody and should be for everybody, but there's a proper way to configure that. And there's a proper way to come to the decision that, hey, I need help here. And asking for help when you think you're this tough guy is really hard. It's hard in a wheelchair. That's why I think what we're talking about today is so important to live a healthy life. And it's my passion right now. I'm at the end of my career, and this is where I want to be. I want to be able to educate people on reasons why they should sit this way or shouldn't sit this way, or let them make that choice. But these are the repercussions of if you're going to do it, this is what's going to happen. We need more education there, better research.
You know, Lori, I agree with Jim, and a lot of it for me being a little bit higher level injury, it's getting myself where I'm comfortable and I'm stable in the chair. And that's evolved over time too. And Jim and I and Sarah have been working just on my seated position, because as I age, I'm not able to support myself as much as I used to. So doing some things with ergonomic seats, which I've always used and always have been a fan of, and tightening that up a little bit so that it holds my pelvis a little bit more stable, working with tension adjustable by strap upholstery. Those have all evolved so much in the 40 years that I've been in a chair that, you know, I feel like with a C5, C6 injury like myself, I can support, and being tall, I can support my upper body really well so that I can do exactly what Jim talked about, where I can, you know, offload my front wheels by placing about 80% of my body weight over the rear of the chair. And that makes me so much more efficient than other people with the same level injury. They're like, how do you turn the chair so easily? And it's not that I love to say that it's because I'm really strong and that, you know, I work out every morning just trying to get my pants on. But, you know, the reality is setting up the chair makes it that much more efficient for me to propel and makes it easier for me to turn than some of my counterparts who have the same level injury. You know, we're constantly talking about that weight argument, and just, you know, you asked for one example, and I'll give you an example. My sub four is the lightest chair that I've ever had. So I'm a 15 wide by 19 deep on a 20 inch frame, and my frame weighs 8.8 pounds with the side guards, wheel locks, everything. And I have Spinergy CX6, so full carbon fiber wheels, carbon fiber hub, rim, everything. But I've recently added, this is a company that Jim and I saw in Europe several years ago called Carbolife. I added their ergonomic coated hand rims to my chair. And a perfect example is the lightest chair I've ever gotten in my car is my sub four. Super easy to transfer it in. My wheels have gone up in weight because I added this fully coated hand rim. I would not change that for anything. This hand rim's made such a difference in my ability to control the chair. So I've added a bit of weight there, and the wheels definitely feel heavier as I'm loading it in and out of a car, but I have more control of the chair than I've ever had before. And so there is this compromise. Jim talked about it, the efficiency, right? I'm pushing the chair 2,500 to 3,500 times per day or more. That efficiency is more important than the weight.
I think something you said, Josh, is super important just for myself as a clinician is obviously you and Jim have immense amounts of knowledge on this topic. If you were to roll into my clinic, I would probably not suggest too many changes, being a little bit, you know, humble and intimidated. However, there needs to be a point where you do have the conversation. So I happen to be at a sporting event over this weekend. Two who I consider very good friends, one who's been in a chair for 10 years, the other five, both came up to me and said, you know, I'm having these issues, my shoulders, what can I do? And, you know, 3-5 years ago, I would have never said anything about their chair because to me, they know best. It's been working for 10 years. Who am I to change it? And, you know, I said, you know, I'm going to be really honest with you. I think it's time we talk about your chair. I think it's time we look at your setup. You know, I think it can be better, and you are aging with a disability. So over time, you know, you're coming to me in your mid-30s and saying you have shoulder pain. we got to stop this in its tracks, because, you know, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, that's going to be a significant burden if you can't do your own transfers. That's your independence to live alone and all those different things. So I was humbled that they came to me, but I found myself answering very differently than I would have. You know, I was more willing to say, let's have this conversation versus, you know, just keeping it as is, assuming that the rider is completely comfortable, completely content. Contentment to me is the worst thing that can happen in this industry and with somebody in their system. I'm hoping that every time they get a new chair, there is at least a minute little change, because that means we're at least looking at it. We're keeping ourselves in tune to what's going on versus becoming complacent.
So well said, because when somebody comes to me and has a serial number and says, I want to duplicate this, it's impossible to duplicate, you know, especially the wear and tear that's on the chair. And then when they get a new chair, it doesn't feel the same. But every time I order a new chair, I always change little nuances of that product because I've learned other things that help me. It might be subtle, but during that consultation, I mean, in that interview process, in a thing about a rigid frame, for example, and most manual chairs, the customization is done at that interview process. We discussed that last podcast, but, you know, you have to really get your crystal ball out and try to figure out what is the best case scenario for this. So if they say, I don't want to change anything, there's got to be something there. And if you don't have to change anything, that's great. But going into a referral and saying, I need something, I need a new chair, and then do the identical chair, there's got to be something that, just like Josh said, there's a new hand rim out there. There's new technology out there that you can experiment with. And we try to help you. And that's why at RGK, and I was very adamant when I joined this team that, hey, if we're going to try to preach this and be these evangelistic approach of this is the way you should not sit, but this is the way your chair should be configured, we need to guarantee that process. So that's why we guarantee the process. Have we made mistakes since we launched? We've made a couple, absolutely. But we're redoing the whole chair. So to us, the only way to get this through to people is that, hey, these are things you need to try that could help you. And we're not experimenting here, guys. What we're trying to do is help the clinical teams think outside the box, because dang, they're so afraid to make that next jump because they know that this is supposed to last them over 5 years or longer. And that's that configure phobia that they have to configure a chair properly. It's always safer to go this other direction. But man, I can tell you guys, and I know people on this call right now have friends that are suffering today or had suffered quite a bit, you know, by living in a chair, and life in a chair is not a luxury at all. And we have an opportunity to make it as close to the best configuration you can do to reduce the chances of getting injured, the chances of having that pain, which is far and few between. So it's so important. Our industry needs to have more research in this area. We need to. I love our researchers that we have, but some of our studies are so dated. We need more research out there. You know, the more that I learn, and I'm not a scientist, I'm just a wheelchair user. I call it like I see it, and I'm not always right. But I know that there's certain configurations in this world that we need to really look at deeper.
Okay. Thanks, Jim. And I'm also going to go back to something that Jim said in our first podcast. He referred to ultra lightweight chairs as wheeled prosthetics. And as we know, prosthetic limbs are custom made for every user. And no one in the industry says, you know, that process is way too expensive, so we should just simplify prosthetic legs to short, average, and tall sizes. I think the prosthetics industry, as well as the mainstream society viewpoint, is that a customized fit is important for prosthetics because this is the person's legs and people understand the process and the cost involved. So I didn't want to let you three go without at least touching on this topic of funding. How do we establish that same sort of mindset for wheelchairs? Jim just mentioned in this podcast that he got braces that his insurance company was willing to pay for. very expensive compared to what they won't pay for a custom fit wheelchair. So how do we get all these stakeholders, including funding sources, to see ultralightweight wheelchairs as wheeled prosthetics unique to every rider?
Well, and I think, first of all, Lori, if you take any of the modern chairs that we're talking about within the industry today, they are wheeled prosthetics, right? Some are more made to measure or more customized than others. But as an industry, we got to look to what the orthotics and prosthetics industry have done so well. They have lobbied for this reimbursement. People that are using these products, you know, are out there and they're creating an active lifestyle, right? The same holds true for a rider in a chair, whether it's power or manual, that with the right equipment, you can get out there and you can do everything that you want to do, right? You can get back to that life that you had. And, you know, being 40 years in a chair, I mean, I can say I've had a great life. And if it wasn't for the equipment that's been made available to me over the years, even before I was in the industry, that proper fitted chair, you know, I was injured when I was 14 years old and I was 6'6" and 200 pounds. I've never been able to use just a standardized chair. Never. When I was at Shepherd, we had to actually modify my chair because the components just did not even exist. But because of that, I've been able to travel. I've been able to hold down a full-time job, go where I want to go. And I think that that's so important, right? That's so important for somebody's mental outlook on life. Jim talked about standing. Both he and I have really gone back to doing a lot of standing. And it's increased my comfort level in the chair. It's allowed me to actually be more aggressive with my posture in the chair. It's made my transfers better. It's reduced my spasticity. So now I'm actually sitting more comfortably in the chair in a better position for propulsion. And I think it's really, Jim touched on it. It's sad that my insurance, his insurance will not bat an eye at paying $20,000, $30,000. I have a power standing chair, so I got a $30,000 standing chair. Won't bat an eye at that. But for a manual chair, if you want a $5,000, $10,000 manual chair, which I'm using 99% of the time, I have to go to war. And there's a lot of layers to this. For me, the biggest layer is we tend to sell ourselves a little bit short within our industry. How do you get one of these chairs? You fill out an order form. I don't even like the term order form. And I don't, because everyone that's doing this is actually designing the chair for their rider. We're not order takers. The ATPs out there have spent a lot of time, and the clinicians have spent a lot of time honing their craft so that they're doing the best they can for that client that's in front of them. I think we are marginalizing our abilities by calling it an order form. And I think we need to look at what the O&P industry has done and do a better job as an industry lobbying. You know, we've got problems with the code. It says in the home, which has been taken completely out of context. What Medicare initially meant by that was not in a hospital. So we've got a lot of things to fix. We've got a great industry. We've got people that, you know, are so passionate about this industry. Just go to ISS and see the presenters out there and the things that they're working on. It's incredible. You know, there's a gentleman that lives up near me, Mike Banks, that's going to be presenting on rolling resistance. He came up with this whole thing all on his own. He's retired. He's not even in the industry anymore, and he wanted to do this. We got great people. We just need to push for better results for our clients.
I think it speaks to you as well. You know, Josh said in the home, and to me, that's definitely a trigger because I spend so much of my time as a therapist working towards, you know, what are your goals functionally? Are we going back to school, parenting, work? You know, what does your life look like? Let's get you set up with vocational rehab services. But then we've already decided that what you're going to use 99% of your day is only appropriate in the home. So we're limiting you right off the bat when you already have so many different obstacles and barriers to overcome getting out of the hospital. So for me, I think it's very important that we change the verbiage, that we change the perspective of what somebody in a wheelchair is capable of, because I have folks that jump out of planes. I have folks that fly planes. You know, there's really no limits to what you can achieve. I don't know why we, you know, based on a couple sentences, decide, you know, what somebody's going to get and what it's going to be used for, if that makes sense.
When I initially went to Sarah and Jim to have them help me with my seating, Jim's first comment was, I would lay off the sweets if I was you. So completely unrelated.
You know, Sarah, you make a great point, and I did not say that to Josh, by the way. How do you take that evaluation from the clinician and that team, you know, that complex, comprehensive seating evaluation, and how do you put the angles into a mobility device? I don't think we've gone there professionally. That professionalism that the OMP side has, and I blame the manufacturers. I work for a manufacturer. I have for a lot of years. We created this market. We need to change that. That's why we need to be able to move the front wheels on a fixed frame. We need to be able to move those fore and aft, not just a K5 where you move the axle fore and aft and up and down. There's a lot of other things that need to happen. That's hard for a manufacturer to do. So we take traditional measurements. And as Josh said, you know, that design template will help you put wheelbase in your evaluation. Instead of the seating angles, understand what that 15, 16, 17 inch wheelbase will do for your user that's 6 foot two or 5 foot two. Those have to change according to our sizes and things. We're so tied into the adjustment side of it that we can adjust into that measurement, which creates a lot of inefficiencies. And again, we create that rolling resistance. And now people are starting to see rolling resistance as a problem. You know, we're rolling around in a vehicle. You know, just look at research from vehicles and how they work with wheelbase and how cars are designed. We need to think of it like that. We need to think of how do we create more efficiency? How do we create a better gas-powered, lack of a better term, you know, your body's the engine. You know, you want to have less things on those moving parts. You need to be able to glide. You need to be able to do these things. So important. And that's what we want to do. We want to help people understand how to get there.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Thanks to Josh, Jim, and Sarah. And mostly just thank you for coming back for round two to talk to me about understanding the made-to-measure philosophy a little bit better. And now, more importantly, I think for talking about why the very best possible fit is so crucial when prescribing and providing successful ultra-lightweight chairs. So just for our listeners, RGK is sponsoring additional podcasts where they'll turn over the microphone to clinicians to continue the rolling dynamics and rolling resistance conversation. So be on the lookout for those. Until then, thank you to RGK's Josh Anderson, Jim Black, and Sarah Leonard for their time and the great education. I've learned so much already. Mobility Management Podcasts are available for listening and downloading on iTunes, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher. The best way to make sure you don't miss any episodes is to subscribe, and you can also go onto our website, mobilitymgmt.com, to listen there. Thanks very much for being with us, and we'll be back again soon.